Hey guys, it's Tom here. Just wanted to let you know that we have a Patreon you can get on for $3 a month and you get bonus episodes every week. And if you sign up for the whole year, you get a 10% discount. That's $2.70 a month, I believe. And we also have a tier where you can be a guest on the Patreon show. You could pick a band yourself to defend and do it on the Patreon. So get on over there. It's patreon.com/standbyyourband. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Stand By Your Band. I'm Tom Takar, the Wolf of Dog Street, joined, as always, by the Prince of Snarkness himself, Tommy McNamara. How are you, Tommy?
I'm very good. I'm very happy to be here. Episode 200. A lot of people said we'd never hit 100, and look where we are now, huh?
It turns out if you don't mind making very little money, you can do a podcast as long as you feel. But get on that Patreon, people. $3 a month. I saw something on the way here that changed my life on the way back from the playing basketball today. I saw a van that said, "Praise Jesus." The J was just fully gone, so I have a new Lord in my life. I'm going to try out Jesus and see how that goes. And I'm thanking Jesus for the guest that we have today. We're very excited. For our 200th episode, we decided to bring out the big dogs. Pull out the big guns. We got Todd Barry here today. How are you, Todd?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Is that a rooster? A painting of a rooster?
That again? Is a painting of a rooster. It is the only art that I've ever been moved by, and I decided to put it in my home. The people at home, you may have seen this in some videos we posted, but I have a rooster who's very inquisitive looking. He has a look in his eye like he wants to know what you're up to, and I really like him. What do you think about this rooster, Todd?
Oh, I like it. It's very striking. So everything else is white,
and
you have this rooster picture. It pops.
Yeah, it's something that my fiance does not want to be a centerpiece of our home any longer.
How much did you pay for it?
This was a gift that I want to say it cost like $60, and I got it. It was at this shop in Chicago that my mom would always want to go to whenever we would visit. And every time we would go to this little store, I would admire this painting and this print that I really liked. And it was just a little too much. They had this guy and they had this cow that had the same vibe. But I liked this rooster a lot. And for 2 years, we went to this shop once every 4 months or so, and every time I would admire it. And then one day I was meeting my mom and uncle for lunch in Chicago, and my uncle had this painting, and he goes, "Check out what I just bought, isn't this crazy?" And I was like, "I love that thing." And he was like, "I'm just kidding, this is a piece of shit. I got it for you because I knew you liked it." But he couldn't, nobody in my family likes it at all. But I,
how much was it again? I missed that.
It was about $60, but okay. This was like 10 years. I've had this thing for 10 years. This was when I, $60 was far too much for a goofy painting, but yeah, now I have that sort of change. Now that I have had a podcast for 200 episodes.
You can buy a $60 painting.
We got to get Tommy a painting, because that wall, it seems that you've changed locations in your home, Tommy.
Well, we used to record in my bedroom in front of a closet with a towel hanging, and I would often get criticized for that. So I thought I'd mix it up and go to the couch, and I thought I was bulletproof over here. There's nothing to make fun of, and here we are. Now it's the lack of stuff.
It looks like you're in a fake room. Like, that's not a real window.
Oh, no, I have a home.
What are you drinking there, Todd? Is that a beer?
I'm drinking some kombucha that I bought on Amazon by the case.
Love a kombucha. I almost bought one for myself today. It's a refined beverage. Let's get on to what we're here to talk about today. Todd, I gave you the prompt of we either talk about bands that are made fun of that you think deserve a little more credit, or bands that are underrated as a new thing we've been doing. And I have to specify that because I got a little guff already today about that this isn't a band that gets made fun of, and I know that.
No.
Yeah, this is an underrated. This is an underrated band, and that we're going to shine a light on. And they're so underrated that even though I had heard one song of theirs, I did not know who they were. When you said their name, I did not know the band Squeeze.
Really?
Had not heard of them, and so much to the point, I spent a lot of time watching tape on these boys over the past couple days and listening to stuff, and I, this is very stupid, but I was watching a concert they did recently in this park. It was really great. I loved it. Very pleasant, but they played the song Tempted, and then they introduced the band during the song Tempted. I was like, that's so weird that they would do that during a cover, because I didn't think it was, I did not know that was their song.
It's not a cover.
No, I know it's not now. But.
Oh, yeah, okay. I was all excited to correct you while you were done. So.
I was corrected earlier today.
That was actually
today.
One of the songs that was sung by
Paul Carrack.
Paul Carrack. Carrack? I think it's Carrack, but he did a song. He was in a band called
Was it Ace? Was he from Ace?
They did a song called Ace, yes. They did a song called How Long Has This Been Going On?
Mm-hmm.
And that's him. So I don't know if he was, I don't think he's not an original member of Squeeze, but I think that might be their biggest hit.
Yeah.
That was
the
only song I knew by them when
his
name was mentioned, yes.
Wow.
Was he the one who replaced Jules?
He may have, He may have replaced Jules Holland.
Yeah. And How Long Will This Go On is also the running song of this podcast.
200.
Yeah, I'm already looking at my watch.
But yeah, Tempted is great, and I did not realize it was theirs because it wasn't on your playlist. So I was like, and whenever I told people we were doing Squeeze, they were like, they would always name the same song, which was hold on, I gotta find it. Pulling Muscles from the Shell. And so I was like, I'd never heard that before. So and if that's the song they're all naming, that must be their biggest song, but not the case.
I don't know. I could be wrong about that. That might be their biggest song, but I'm just guessing.
I think Tempted, you guys want to guess where that is their first song to chart in the U.S. You guys want to guess where that bad boy charted?
I think I know.
So it was 1981, if that gives you anything.
25.
Okay. What do you got, Tommy?
Well, I am feeling like a moron because I thought it went number one. Maybe it went number one in the UK. I don't know what, but yeah, what was it?
It did not go number one in either of those places. So, you certainly sound like a fool now. It charted at 41 in the UK and 49 in the US, which blew my mind. I would have thought that it was higher too. And if I was smarter, I would have looked up what did chart higher that year, but I did not do that.
I'm surprised it wasn't more than that. But then again, you know, it's not like top 40 is full of great songs all the time. So
true. That's a good point.
That's a great point.
That is a great point. They probably just had some Michael Jackson up there, some dog shit. So what is your history with the band Squeeze? Were you into them from the jump? What's the story? Well, I guess it would be from the jump.
I think when I became sort of cool in like 1979, I went to I lived in South Florida, and everything in anytime someone came to South Florida, like New York, everyone comes to New York. You don't you find out you missed a show. You know what I mean?
Like every day you could miss something.
If like, you know, I went to see Blondie and a band called Rockpile, which is Nick Lowe and Dave Edmonds and a few other guys. And it was a place called the Sunrise Musical Theater, which is where I ended up graduating high school, actually. But it was sort of outside of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and suburb, like in the middle, almost in the woods, practically. There was no woods, but it was just in a big field, and all of a sudden there was this little 4,000 seat place. So after around that time is when I started getting into like British power pop and things like that. Although Blondie is not a British band, but Rockpile was. And then oddly enough, this is my one Squeeze encounter. I just looked up. They played the same place in 1988, mm-hmm. the Sunrise Musical Theater. I just looked that date up, and I was like 23 years old. And a few days later, I was walking around. I may have been substitute teaching, but I was walking around the Galleria Mall in Fort Lauderdale, and I see one of the dudes from Squeeze at the information desk asking a question.
And then you're making popcorn over there? Sorry.
No, that's my cat in her tunnel. The idea, that's part of the allure of that, is that it crinkles.
Yep, the allure. It really it's so loud.
If she starts using the wheel behind me, that's going to get crazy.
Game over at that point.
So anyway, she hasn't used this tunnel in a while. Also, she's like, oh, this is a good time to start. She's being cute. Now she's just sitting in it. All right. Just stay right there and be cute. All right. So anyway, I saw someone from Squeeze who I thought was Chris Difford. Like, I'm usually good about that kind of thing. Like, I know either I'd say I don't know or I know who a band member is or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I saw him going to a bookstore and I kind of followed him in, not in a creepy way, just in a – although that does sound creepy. I went into the bookstore and he was sort of hunched down looking down at these magazines. And I was like, Chris? He goes, Glenn. And I shook his hand. He gave me a nice firm handshake. And then I just did the thing. I mean, I was young and dopey. And also, you don't see any – it's not like you walk around the Gallery Mall and see, I'm going to look for celebs. I'm going to look for power pop celebs. And so I kind of just started that. I did a thing where, you know, I've experienced this now that I'm massively famous. But they – where just someone lingers too long and they're not a jerk or anything. And I remember telling him a story. I go, how's it going? Go, did you have fun at your show? Yeah, like, yeah, it was good. And he goes, yeah, I'm just looking for something to read on the flight home. And I was like, okay. And then I told him the story, which is true, that apparently David Lee Roth got in trouble for stealing a magazine from the same bookstore. Wow. And he's like, oh gosh. And then I was like, all right. And then he just kind of stood up and goes, well, cheers. I was like, and then only like years later, I was like, oh, I think I may have been a little bit annoying.
That is so funny that you say that, because I have a similar story with the celebrity in the story is one Todd Barry, where when I was 23, I would have been in Indiana. Again, a place you don't see people a lot, and especially in Bloomington, you don't expect to see people you recognize from the TV. But I remember I was working at the hospital, and I spotted you, and I was like, it just was like, I knew you were at the Comedy Attic that weekend, but I wasn't expecting to see you at my job. And then I just waved at you, and then I was like, oh, that was, I immediately was like, oh, that was a weird thing to do. I don't know you at all. And then I was like, hey, how's it going? I'm a fan or whatever. And then I asked you what you were at the hospital for. And then I panicked because I was like, oh, you're not supposed to ask people that. And I was like,
I don't remember going to a hospital in Indiana.
Yeah, it was a severe brain trauma that brought you there.
I went to a hospital. I mean, I have gotten sick on the road. And
yeah, it wasn't anything serious. You were just
especially if I don't remember it. I could have been some, you know, sometimes you get these random pains.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just like, this is going to be the big one. And then so I'll just be like, oh, I have 12 hours to kill anyway. Might as well go to the hospital and check it out.
Sure. Or maybe it's Indiana's so boring, you might have been like, let's check out this hospital.
It's weird that I don't remember that, but I know I've been to the doctor on the road. So, yeah. So you told me.
I just said, hey, I saw you at the Comedy Attic or whatever. And then I was like, I asked what you were doing there. And immediately you started to answer. And I was like, oh, I'm not supposed to ask you that. That's like, it's like ethically wrong for my job. And I was like, I'll get out of here. And I just left. I just left you in the dust.
That I remember. I don't remember the hospital. I remember something annoying me, though. And, what were you doing? Were you a nurse?
No. I was planning on going that path at one point, but I was I worked in the emergency department. I did a few different jobs where I was like a person who like takes your blood pressure and all that stuff, or I took registration information and all that good stuff. But it was a nice little comedy job because it was only 3 days a week and you work 12-hour shifts, so I could go do whatever the rest of the time.
Did you see, I'm sure I've asked you this before, have you seen Mellencamp around?
So I have not seen Mellencamp around, but he is famously, and if you don't want this in here, I can edit it out, but I say it a lot. He's famously a huge asshole and like bad tipper type of guy who really? Like eats at Chili's with his family and pulls like, this is a story my sister told me that I really love, which is that I'm sure I've told this on the podcast at some point, but that, do you know what Shoe Carnival is? No. It's like a shitty chain shoe store. It's like a Rack Room Shoes type place. It's like, yeah, except for worse. It's got Carnival in the name, and it's they don't have shit. And he went to Shoe Carnival, and he wanted a certain size of shoe, and they were like, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have that. And he said, do you know who I am? At essentially a Payless Shoes, he pulled a "Do you know who I am?" which is just unforgivable to me.
You know, I feel like a lot of "Do you know who I am?" stories are not true, because I actually had someone write to me once, and they're like, they claimed I went into their girlfriend's store and said, "Do you know who I am?" Like, how would what? I just walked into a store and said, "Do you know who I am?"
Do you know where I am?
Like, there's no. That's something I would say as a joke if I was in the middle of a conversation sure. with someone. But the idea that I just walked into – this is the way I walk into stores. I walk into stores, and I don't just look for what I want to buy and buy it. I go, do you know – it's just fucking absurd. Although – with Mellencamp, it may have been.
I think it's true. The only reason I think it's true with Mellencamp, if it was like an isolated story, I would go, no way did you see that. I mean, it was my sister, so you're really calling, you're questioning my sister's credibility here. I don't quite appreciate, but no, I'm kidding. That might have even been her secondhand story. So, but if it weren't combined with all the other ones, people around town do not love Mellencamp. But he did bring Meg Ryan to our town, which is fun. So there
I do like that he shops at a shoe carnival. Though.
Yeah. Yeah. He lives like not an, it seems like he does not live an extravagant life from the fact that you could see his family at Chili's.
That's weird that he, like they didn't have a size and did he think going, do you know who I am, would suddenly go, all right, we got your size.
That's what I mean. It's like, oh, we have a Bloomington celebrity closet back here. And there's so few people. It's like Bobby Knight or like him. And
we'll turn this size 8 into a size 10 and a half.
We have a cobbler back there for special occasions. but no, I have not personally seen him, but I do, every time I go back, I kind of hope for a run-in or that he'll somehow end up at the Comedy Attic. I was just saying the other day, Jesse Eisenberg lives there now, and he goes to the Attic sometimes.
I did a show with him there.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the old...
Yeah, I know him. Do you know who we are? No.
but yeah, it's quite a... quite a town, though. It's weird that we have just a celebrity that lives there, though. We should listen to some music here. I want to get into some of this playlist.
Oh, is that the way we do it? I don't know how this works.
Okay. We'll just play some clips of these songs and go down and talk about why they're on here and all that good stuff. Basically, the idea is that we're for people who don't know this band or for people who maybe questioned why this band. They don't think that this band deserves any more success than they get. This playlist is kind of a way in for them, to check them out. And
I left off Tempted just because I thought it was so played. I thought it would be more interesting.
I think you're right. I think you're right. So this is a new cable here that I got. So let me make sure you guys can hear what I'm playing here. Whoops. All right. So this is Pulling Muscles from the Shell.
Yeah.
Can you hear that? Oh, hell yeah. Pulling muscles from a shell. Pulling muscles from a shell. Shrinking in the sea so cold. Top is ladies look away. A heaving in a sudden shower. Shells from the rain. You wish you had a motorboat to pose around the harbor.
Yeah, it's just such a like smart person song without yes. being pretentious.
Yeah.
Like no way a dummy could have written that song.
No dummies talking about William Tell.
Yeah, yeah. I just like witty, although I mean witty, smart pop.
Yeah. It seems like by all accounts, Chris Difford is a brilliant lyricist, and I loved a lot of like I said, I watched an hour long concert last night and had a great time. Wow. I feel like I don't know if you're gonna like this comparison, but I thought of it earlier. They felt like a smarter Bare Naked Ladies to me a little bit because they're very silly, but also a little bit deeper with the lyrics.
You know, that's funny you should ask that because I got asked to be on a Bare Naked Ladies podcast. And I sort of said I'd do it, and I still haven't gotten back to them. It's been months. But
Get
back to them.
When you say a Bare Naked Ladies podcast, do you mean like a Stephen Page? He's doing a podcast,
it's a podcast about the Bare Naked Ladies. Ah, I asked you to do it, and I was like, I actually have a couple of Bare Naked Ladies stories, but not really big stories. But
that's the podcast to tell it probably. But we're gonna hijack that because we talk about Bare Naked Ladies a lot. All right, fair enough.
But it just reminded me that you said Bare. I think that I think Naked Ladies are a little jokier, maybe.
Sure.
I hate to, maybe that's insulting. I've got no beef with the Bare Naked Ladies.
On the record, no beef.
Yeah, but I think that's an interesting way. I don't know musically. Do you think musically?
I don't think musically necessarily, except for I don't think they sound so much like them. But I just think they have a similar vibe of like we're kind of funny. Like in all the interviews I watched of them, they're funny guys. I liked watching them talk, and they have a sense of humor about their lyrics. They even say like, yeah, a lot of our songs are kind of a joke, but and that feels Bare Naked Ladies-y to me. And they're just kind of harmless guys. Like none of them seem like assholes. They just seem kind of silly and like they just want to make fun music.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're quite as fun with a capital F.
Right.
But still fun. But I mean, they are fun.
Sure.
They're not like Bare Naked Ladies fun. But equally as fun, just in a different way. How about that?
There we go. According to Squeeze lyricist Chris Difford, this song was inspired by a vacation that his parents sent him on to Margate, which is a seaside resort in Kent, England. Difford told us, "We stayed in the caravan at a holiday camp. There was a club there where bands played, and the song reflects that atmosphere of the traditional working class get away from it all weekend. It was the first time I had really looked up into the sky to see what it was like. It was a beautiful dark sky and felt amazing to be away from London."
I remember there's a reference to Harold Robbins' paperback in that song somewhere.
Yeah,
which
that's
I would like.
That's definitely not. That's definitely a smarter lyric than you're used to hearing. Yeah, some people thought the song was about something dirtier than it was, but it sounds like it's not.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently.
Euphemism or something?
What's that?
They thought that was a euphemism?
Yeah. It says here, this is on SongFacts, but it says, "Some listeners thought this song was about masturbation. After all, he was completing his holiday behind the chalet. What else could he be doing back there? Get your heads out of the gutters, people."
You're here, it's just
what
all
are you supposed to do?
Not a beautiful home. It's a place for people to jerk off outside.
That's the truck stop of the UK. all right, let's keep going down this list here. The next song we have is Another Nail in My Heart. So turn this bad boy up. I love that song.
It's a good song, right?
That's a fun song. And apparently Difford doesn't really like the lyrics, but I think it's great.
What does he say about
that? It just says Difford has expressed disappointment with the lyrics on this song, though he praised Tilbrook's solo, which the solo is sick, but yeah. I like the lyrics. I think it's good.
I like there's some good cymbal crashes in there, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a sick song. I like that one a lot. What does it mean, though?
I mean, I think that one's a little more direct than pulling muscles. Wait, what was the other one?
Yeah, pulling muscles from a shell.
Yeah, I think is. I mean, another nail for my heart is pretty, I think, self-explanatory. Yeah.
The topic, as usual, is a cocktail of love lost and heavy drinking, culminating in the memorable chorus, and here in the bar, the piano man's found another nail for my heart. Just a simple drinking song. I like that. Crack a kombucha and put that on. All right. Song three here is Vicky Verky.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. Let me skip forward a little bit. Berkey. What a song. What a story.
Yeah, I love that. I don't know if that solo is like a harpsichord or a clavichord or something.
Yeah, I couldn't tell what that is.
Keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that song because it's got an interesting song structure, and it's just kind of like, it seems like it's about to kick into a chorus and then it just goes another round.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not an expert in talking about songs, but it's definitely a different song structure. But I think that's like a song on every mixed tape or CD that I've made for someone.
Mm-hmm.
If I put that on there, it means I like you and and you're going to break up with me.
I like to put as many songs that include abortion into playlists.
Is that about abortion?
That's what all the song meaning stuff. So I was reading people arguing about the meanings behind this song, and now it's disappeared. Let's see here. It's two different people were like, the first comment is, this is from Just a Phase, says, great song. It's about this young girl and her older boyfriend, and they love each other. They decide to have sex and she gets pregnant. He's away at the military and gets a letter about it and how she's getting an abortion. And by the end of the song, they still love each other. And then, there's another comment that also echoes that. I don't think the word is quite in there, though.
The word abortion is not.
Yeah, I don't
out.
Think they. I don't think they spell that out in there.
Well, the title makes it so clear.
Yes,
Vicky Verky. You just know.
Well, yeah, that there's something really passionate about that song,
mm-hmm.
which is why I've shared it with so many women around the world.
So many women have received a letter in the mail from Todd Berry. That's very interesting. You still make it? Do you make a playlist for a lady in this day and age? It feels like that's kind of.
I have in the past couple of years done it.
Do you make a CD for them, or do you just like give them playlist from Spotify?
Do you remember making tapes? I don't know if that's before your time.
I made myself. I was too young to make anybody else a tape, but I you know what? I made my mom a tape for Mother's Day, but like when I was a kid. But by the time I was cooking, in my 30s or whatever, I was giving women CDs.
Yeah, you used to have to, with cassettes, you used to have to, write down the song length and and the idea was like, because if you ended up with like a minute and a half dangling of dead air, you're like, fuck.
Yeah, it was quite a puzzle of love.
Like, oh man, this is a 3 minute song and there's 3 minutes and 10 seconds left.
That is interesting that you'd put this on a song or a tape for somebody that you liked. Because I, speaking of Bare Naked Ladies, I would throw Jane on every one of those.
Really?
Yeah, it was a little too on the nose, I'd say. And honestly,
was the woman named Jane?
No, never. Never liked a woman named Jane. Not in the love capacity or even just liking them. Keep Jane's
That's
out of my life.
Weirdly, I like that name, Jane.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a good name. It's just no woman deserves it, apparently, because I haven't met a good one. Just kidding. We've had Janes on this show.
Oh, yeah, that's true. There was a good origin story for this band that I found when I was doing my little research, which is that Chris Difford says that he stole money from his mom's purse to put a card in a candy shop window to advertise asking a guitarist to join his band, even though he didn't actually have
a band. He was lying.
And then Glenn was the only person who responded to the ad.
And
that's funny that he would put that ad up and it's kind of shaky. And then it's like the guy's actually super talented.
Yeah. Yeah. It all worked out.
Really good.
Glenn was working on music with maybe Jules or somebody I was reading about before he met. So two of the guys met with Difford, and then Glenn was like, "Yeah, I could never write songs with this other guy." And then I read Difford's lyrics, and I was blown away. Which makes sense. I mean, they're very good lyrics. Speaking of great lyrics, I think we should jump to another song because we got three more here. So let's hear Black Coffee in Bed. Just a great title, by the way.
This is a good song. I think Elvis Costello sings background on some part of that song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he also does on Tempted, right? He does a verse in that. He does a verse on Tempted, I believe.
Yeah, maybe it's Tempted.
But that might be true of this one as well. What a great breakup song.
Yeah.
Just right off the bat, Stain on My Notebook Where Your Coffee Cup Was. Woof.
Yeah, that's heavy duty, right?
That's heavy stuff, man. I wasn't ready for all that, Todd.
Produced, yeah, he produced Tempted.
Mm-hmm.
He produced Tempted? Okay.
Yeah, so that might be probably the one.
I saw that they did a, there was a double bill in New York many years ago of Elvis Costello and Squeeze. I was like, oh my God, that's like my dream. Wow. See those together.
Yeah. Mm. Were you seeing a lot of live music pre-pandemic in New York?
In the past few years, because I have friends who are musicians, I tend to go to my friends' band shows. And then I will also see someone. But I mean, then you get used to being like on a guest list and the VIP section there. You know, mm-hmm. But the weirdest show I did recently, probably a year ago, a friend of mine, she lives in Arizona, but she had a job working in production for Mariah Carey.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And she's like, Mariah Carey, like whose music I'm not into at all.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not slamming her. I'm just not really my thing. And then she's like, you know, we're coming to Radio City Musical. I was like, yes, I do want to go. I went to a Mariah Carey concert by myself, and it was just because I mean, just for this, the life experience.
Yeah.
And just as people just freaking out. This woman in front of me was probably like older than me, and she's screaming like a fucking lunatic. And she's like, all right, this is a nice treat. It's just hurting right now. But it's just, so that's fun to see a band that you wouldn't normally go see, which is why I like going to festivals, because sometimes you'll pop around and or performing at festivals. But
right.
But I'm trying to think who else I've seen lately. But I do like live shows. Sometimes though they're uncomfortable. I find like they're just like if it's oversold and it's you just getting shoved around.
Yeah, I don't remember
venue, Todd.
Bowery Ballroom's great. Bowery,
yes.
I mean, as far as comfort, like, I don't know what it's like to play there, but I mean, Radio City Music Hall is,
yeah.
I mean, their restrooms are like unbelievable. Have you ever been there?
I have never been.
Tape a special there.
But there's yeah.
Restrooms
like,
oh yeah,
like
I forgot
3,000 toilets in the
cool. Bowery Ballroom is great. I saw Built to Spill there, like right when I got here, and it was so fun. And for some reason, I never make the trip. I feel like there's so many venues in Brooklyn that I end up at that I like doing that. But
I went to Brooklyn Steel not too long ago. That was nice.
That's like my favorite. I know it's a new venue, so it doesn't have history, but Brooklyn Steel, I just love seeing shows there. It's like
perfect. Yeah, it's good size as well. It's clean, and it's trying to think what other venues I like. I mean, Beacon's cool.
Yeah.
I
saw Sturgill at Beacon.
What's that?
I saw Sturgill Simpson at Beacon, and it was really fun.
Who is Sturgill Simpson?
Sturgill Simpson is like a modern country, but like more, leaned, it's like country rock, but it's, he's very cool. I think you'd like his stuff. He's got some very smart lyrics as well. I'm a big fan of him. If you haven't heard, you got to check out Turtles All the Way Down. It's great.
Really?
Yeah. I'll send it over to you after this. Sturgill Simpson. I just listened to a bunch of his stuff this weekend. It's fun stuff.
If you're in the my cat, I'm just giving you an update on my cat. I got this thing I ordered just for because I was bored. Like it was a grow your own cat grass thing.
Yes, I love those.
And she started using it. The first time I witnessed her using it was just like 15 minutes ago. Now she's knocked it off the shelf. She's really getting into it.
It's weird that they know to eat that because I got it for my cats too, and they ate it immediately. And it's not like they mess with our other plants, but they don't eat them.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, you got to be careful with cats and plants.
I know. Well, you have to look out for which ones are poisonous to them.
Pet safe, but we're going off topic. I also find this is something no one agrees with me. I can't get people to agree. I think concerts are too fucking loud. 99%. Like painfully fucking.
Yeah.
But you're not supposed to ever admit it. You know what I mean? Then you're like, ooh, grandpa. Because you'll see like, you know, the drummer has this little maneuver they do on the hi-hat. And that's lost. You know, it just looks like they're moving their arms.
It's been so long now that I can't remember that. I always end up being further back anyway, so for me, it's not that crazy. But that might be part of it, is that it's so loud that I just naturally
stand back. Yeah, I also have sensitive ears, but I did a show with I know Jay Mascis a little bit.
Yeah, I love Dinosaur Jr.
His manager.
You did a show with Jay Mascis?
He was doing like five nights at the Bowery Ballroom, and I was like, I'll do something. I'll see. I ended up sitting in bongos with someone, a couple of band members, and I just said, and they were really nice about this. I go, my ears are weak, and you guys are fucking extremely loud. And they were so nice to me. They got me like headphones and earplugs. I was like up in Bowery Ballroom, dressing room was like upstairs behind the stage, and I was like in there like curled up. Like I couldn't even watch a show. The stack of amps they had was just hilarious. It was just hilarious.
But, yeah.
But then when I went out on stage, you could just see all these people. You could just see all the earplugs in the audience, just the different colored earplugs lit up. Day glow kind of is. But yeah, that was loud.
I saw them in Bloomington, and that is the only time I've seen amps stacked up like that.
It's just God bless you, but my God. It's just an assault.
Yeah, did he try to break a guitar over your head or anything?
No, he's like the quietest, mellowest guy I've ever met in my life.
I love Dinosaur Jr. That's one that that's a regular go-to for me these days. But yeah, it's been so long since I've been to a show. I mean, besides, I've been going to all these private, these secret warehouse shows with unmasked people. And
oh yeah, me too.
Those are good.
I got some scoops on some warehouse shows party.
All right, let's hear the last couple songs here. The next one is Piccadilly. Let me skip forward a little bit here.
I love that ending, man.
Yeah, baby.
Hard like a gun. Is that what it is?
Hard like a gun was just half of the battle.
So good.
So good. That's another Costello one.
That's he produced it?
Produced, yeah. Written by Glenn Tilbrook and Chris Difford. I love their voices.
Yeah. They
sound good like now. Like watching that show, Glenn's voice is incredible.
Yeah, is that the reedy kind of super? Oh, Glenn's voice.
Glenn's voice is still incredible. Yeah, he was. It felt like he was, taking lead vocals on most of the songs that I was paying attention to.
Yeah, he generally did, I believe.
But I like it a lot.
Yeah, but I like the way that song just kicks into that hard like a gun. It just really just keeps pushing it. Mm-hmm. You have to listen to the song to know what I'm talking about. I know we just did.
I was going to say, I believe that's what we just encountered. all right, let's hear the last song on this list, and then we have a segment to get to. So here is Labeled with Love off the same album, which is East Side Story. That song is very pretty.
Yeah, that's. I thought put that on there because it's a great song. It's also a little different than the others.
That's one thing I noticed about them. All the songs are so different. They have such a range.
Yeah.
It feels like they toyed with a lot of different styles and sounds. And I like it. This is like their stab at kind of country-ish.
Yeah, slightly country-ish. And I just remember I have a somewhat vivid memory of driving around South Florida, going to my substitute teacher jobs, listening to a cassette with that on it. But I was the coolest guy in South Florida.
I love that he became drinker and she became mother. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed that.
That is great. That's from, I think it was Difford was saying that he had been listening to Hank Williams a lot. Oh, no, Tilbrook had been listening to Hank Williams. And they originally weren't going to put this on the album. Difford didn't want to put it on there. And then
oh, really?
Elvis Costello really liked it though. And messed with it a little bit and to get it on. And, yeah, I like it a lot. Yeah. I mean, you got to either become drinker or mother. Those are your only options. really quick, just an aside, sorry if this is an annoying question, because I know it's a comedy related one, but because of the South Florida stuff, after you called in to Letterman, did people at your school or in your town go like, holy shit, you were on David Letterman?
I imagine they did. I'm guessing they did.
Yeah, because that was specifically at a time where people were really paying attention to late night. So it would be such an event to
be like
a kid and be on late and have your voice on late
night. I don't
remember
if that happened when I was already still in high school, or I know I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it was a pretty cool thing. Now, I recently redid a new version of that one. I ended up on Jimmy Fallon's hashtag game the other night.
I saw that on Twitter. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah. I love that. all right. Well, that is the playlist. We have one more segment to get to before we get out of here, which is that we have the peanut gallery to get to. That the listeners of the show like to give their thoughts on every band we talk about. And I got to be honest, I was surprised. We got a lot of comments on this, so we're not going to be able to get to all of them. But let's first we'll go to the people on Patreon who commented. And
on the show that we're doing right now?
Not like live. On the band.
Oh, you previewed
yes.
It.
Yes. Okay. Yes. All right, I'm going to throw this to you just because this is a Patreon subscriber. You don't have to answer it if you don't want. But JV writes in, please ask Todd about his performance in the Golden Globe Award-winning film, The Wrestler. I've never seen him mention it.
That's funny. I do get a lot of tweets about how people sort of taking that tone of like, I were you in the wrestler? Why don't you ever talk about it? I mean, and the irony is, of course, I bring it up.
I know you don't like to talk about it, so don't feel like you have. All right. Next comment is from Brendan Townend, who writes, such a great pairing, Squeeze and Todd Berry, both artists I admire that maybe the mainstream has underestimated. Well, I don't know about that. But as a result, I love them both more for it. Story time, I once sang Pulling Muscles to a girl who I had a locker next to all 4 years of high school because I thought the lyrics said Pulling Muscles for Michelle, as if the song was... the songwriter was happy to be working hard and injuring themselves for the benefit of a girl named Michelle. Needless to say, we remain nothing more than locker neighbors after the incident. That's funny because that's like some pre-internet shit where you're like, yeah, pulling muscles for Michelle.
Right.
Ron Trimbath writes, Winona Ryder and Janine Garofalo singing To Tempted and Reality Bites and throwing a cigarette into Ben Stiller's car is one of my favorite movie scenes ever. I guess that's all I have to say. Love your work, Todd. All right. Thanks Ron. Tommy, do we get any on Twitter?
Yeah, I'll read a couple of the Twitter ones. Max Power said, very underrated. Cool for Cats is a fantastic album. Chimple Sticks.
Oh, man. Now I'm remembering other songs I could have put on there, but. You only get six.
Yeah, that's right. Six is all you get.
Chimple Sticks said, excellent band. First album I ever bought was a copy of singles 45s and under when I was 7 years old. They're a very underrated band from that era. Very British, so it'll be interesting to hear your guys' take on them. They are very British. I will agree with that.
Yes.
They're not annoying. Do you guys like them? Do you like them?
I
really like the playlist.
Yeah, I like I said, I didn't see this is the we're saving that for the very last part. Oh, that's okay. That's what we get into right at the end. Don't jump the gun on us, Todd.
Don't make it obvious I've never listened to your podcast.
Yeah, right. You listen.
You used to call into the podcast all the time. Matt from your program said they were cool. I have a theory that Tempted inspired Tom's Diner and could be a cool mashup. And I thought that was so funny because I always associated those two songs together. I think maybe just because I used to listen to XRT in Chicago all the time, and they would always, those two songs were always in rotation no matter what year it
was. The Suzanne Vega song?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Just those songs. I don't know why I always associated them together also.
I got a Suzanne Vega story if you want to hear.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We were on a flight together back from Seattle. I just noticed her somehow. We're both in coach, and I tweeted out something. You could probably look up this tweet somewhere. I said, I don't remember. I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, if me and Suzanne Vega are at coach, who's up in first class? The Beatles and Chris Christie? But and then she responded. She seemed nice.
Hell yeah. Who was up there? No, it looks like this tweet has been wiped from the internet. I searched for it.
I did find it. But
oh, you did?
Yeah, it's from 2011. It says, Suzanne Vega and I were in coach on this flight to Newark. Who's in first class? The seven justices of the NJ Supreme Court and Sting?
All right. Is that all the Twitter ones?
Yeah.
Okay. We have a few from Facebook that I'll read here. We got a lot. I'm not gonna read them all, but George Gordon. He says, can't wait to hear this. Take me. I'm yours because I'll probably be pulling muscles from a shell while listening. If you're wondering, Squeeze rules. Peter John Burns says the Squeeze 45s and under album was the Carole King's Tapestries for my cohort of Gen Xers. I graduated high school in 86. Everyone bought that damn album. And if you refused, they'd send someone in to sneak a copy onto your shelves at night while you slept. Let's see here. Mary Houlihan says perfect band. And, by all means, I'd love to hear you guys talk about them. Jared Dryden says Squeeze kicks ass. That's true. James Fritz says Up the Junction is one of the most perfect songs ever.
That's a great song. That's one I could have added.
Yeah. It sounds like you blew it here, Todd.
No, I mean, I like all the songs. It just shows that they have more than the six that you
No, there was some on the on that concert that I really liked that weren't on the playlist, and I was just trying to think of what they were because I didn't see song tracks, I just heard them. But that's all the comments I'm going to read. And again, get on that Patreon if you want your comment guaranteed to be read. And that brings us to the final piece of this. So you get to give your final thoughts on the band Squeeze here, Todd. What do you got?
Well, they're smart, witty, power pop, but not jokey. If you're over 40 years old, you don't need to be sold on them, or maybe 45. But you younger folks might want to have a listen.
Yep. Well, all of our listeners are under the age of 13, so I think
they're also all a band that's like, they're, I think, underappreciated, but also more successful than 99% of the bands, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way. That's a good way to put it. And even in the concert doc that I watched yesterday, they kind of made reference to like, yeah, we're just still here trying to get famous. And it's like,
yeah.
I loved it. I liked the playlist a lot. Like I said, there were some songs on that live thing that I liked a lot too, and maybe more even. But I did like this playlist a lot, and I listened one of the ways to listen to music, which was driving today. And it was great driving around music. I really had a nice time with it. Very chilled out. And I enjoyed it a lot. I think I got to go 6 out of 6. I enjoyed it quite a bit and no qualms with it. I wish I could figure out which song I heard last night that it came on right before Muscles in a Shell that I was like, that I love that song, but I cannot remember it.
You go back and listen to it and Shazam it.
Yeah, I should do that. I should do that. I'm probably going to right after this because I want to hear it again now. Tommy, what do you think?
Yeah, I really love this playlist. And it made me think, I was like, I don't know why I never did do like a deep dive on this band because I truly love that song, Tempted.
Yeah.
Like, the most casual thing you could say about them. But it was like, I always loved it. And they're a band that's like played Madison Square Garden. So they're not like an unknown band. But it is one of those things I never did. And I wish I did. I love the playlist. I thought it was great. The one thing I wanted to bring up that I forgot is I watched an episode of their VH1 show Bands Reunited about them. Do you
guys yes. remember that show? I watched some of that last night too.
And it's so funny because I forgot about that show and I forgot that what happens in this episode is that sometimes they do the whole thing and then they don't agree to it. It's just like a weird episode of television where they're all like saying positive things about each other, but then it's just this big letdown where you're like, oh, well, I guess that was a complete waste of time and energy.
Really?
The idea is that they will reunite?
Yeah,
so that is so weird.
Where they ambush each member of the band
in different
places and try to get them to agree to do one night concert that VH1 will like pay for and put on.
Oh wow!
And basically, almost everyone agreed to it except Jules, who was like gave kind of a tentative, iffy yes.
Uh-huh.
And then after it was like Jules did not agree, so
damn,
did not do it.
What caused their breakup?
Whole episode, and it's like, oh man.
But I feel like they are technically still together on some level.
They are. Well,
they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did reunite after that, which is so funny that they didn't do it for the show. And then like they put out like two albums since then.
Yeah. Yeah. That is interesting. I forgot. I meant to read about their breakup and I just forgot to because I just watched a thing that was pretty recent. So I was like, well, they clearly got back together. And yeah, they talk so nicely about each other, except for when they're being silly and they say that they came up with every idea for the band or whatever. But yeah, the way they the Glenn and what's his name?
Chris
talk about each other. It's such mutual respect. And it's like, you really have to have that to make it that long, which is why I think our podcast is probably going to end within the hour.
It's going to be your last episode.
Yep. Todd, you also get to rate this playlist out of 6 because it's 6 songs.
Well, I picked it. I'm going to go 6.
Not everybody does. All right. This has been so fun, Todd. Is there anything you want to plug on the way out?
I just have my Netflix special that's been there a while, and Amazon Prime has a few specials.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got some tour dates, which hopefully will actually
happen. I think they're happening. I think we're on the back end of this this thing.
Okay,
as long as touring. I think by Easter it'll be over.
By last Easter.
Yeah, by last Easter, we're done.
And the Easter before last Easter.
Check out Todd's tour dates. I have a couple coming up. I'll be at Mohegan Sun April 22nd to the 24th in the DC improv. I think that's also like the 20th to the 22nd or something like that. So I'd love to see you guys in DC. That's going to be fun. I'll be in Texas at a Trump rally or something. And I'll be at Houston Riot in, I think, June 19th or 8th or 20th, and Louisiana as well. Tommy, you got anything?
Yeah, this is an exciting thing that is just officially on the books. Me and Luke Mones are going to bring back our old show, which Todd, you popped
Hell
into
yeah.
once. If you remember, we used to do in the East Village, but we're doing it at the outdoor of the Bell House.
Oh, amazing.
Show. Oh, wow.
May 15th. Very excited for that. May 15th, Saturday night, 8 p.m. And we're going to have a great lineup, and I can't wait for that first like real thing on the books that I'm very excited about.
Yes, that's awesome.
Cool, man.
Oh yeah, Good God is back too. Sultan Room. It's May 22nd or no, April 22nd and May 6th, I think. So get out to that too. All right, guys, we're out of here. Thanks so much, Todd. Keep it crispy. Bye.